Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 597. It's the 28th of September, 2016. On the podcast today, Doc's Stock Surgery. He covers the following stocks. Doc Holliday, that is, small cap commentator. Sarium Resources, or Sarium Holdings, SAR. Upland Resources, UPL. Churchill Mining, CHL. Life Science Development Limited, Life and Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG, going very strongly today. And of course, Alan Green, it's a Wednesday, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about Trifast. Plus, I also have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. By the way, any company that appears in this top five, the guys at Vox here, we do approach them for them to appear on the podcast because we know there's demand for these companies because they are being followed. And it's a measure of money flow. People, you know, add these to their watch list, do research, and generally, invariably end up investing in these companies. So we know there's demand there for these companies. That's why we approach them to appear on the podcast. I also have the most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. And today, three companies have all been liked the most, exactly the same amount of likes they had. So I'll cover that in a bit. Plus, I have today's suggested one for your watch list is Aminex, AEX, suggested by Matt. And I'll read out the reasons of the research by Matt, why Matt thinks you should add this company to your watch list in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is the doctor. The doctor's in the house. It's the Dr. Holliday. You're right, fella.
Morning, sir. It seems very fitting today to be talking doctors, given the subject matter, I guess.
What are we talking? What stocks are we covering today? What are you looking at? I can't get the connection here. What are we on about?
Sarium Holdings, an old favourite of mine. It's got some medical type of link, although I guess Doc Holliday was a dentist and I worked within the power and oil and gas industry. I suppose there is absolutely no correlation, but in the reality and by the virtue of discussion, we're gonna link them together. So, Sarium Holdings.
I know very little about Sarium Holdings. I know it's very popular. A while back, it's coming back a bit of popularity now. Tell me the story. I don't know anything about it really.
It's been around since about 2004-2005. Tim Mitchell and John Reeder. A sort of stalwarts within the PLC business. They've been involved with this business for a long, long time, and since the beginning. Back in 2010, there was a lot of people really gone into the story with Sarium Holdings. There was a lot of research done, and it was being shared back at that point within forums. It was a really in-depth sort of knowledge and analysis on their pipelines and compounds. In 2011, the company released some news. Interpretation of that news was somewhat woolly, and as a result, the shares went from 0.20p, and by the time the move finished, it was about 4.5p. So for people out there who ask, you know, can you tell me one of the biggest rises you've seen? Well, that was it. It did about 25 times the multiple in a short period of time. The misinterpretation was that they'd found a cure for cancer. That wasn't to be the case, of course, as we know today. But naturally, that they advanced on their predominant compound, which was the CHK1, which is, they've announced the licensing agreement on. I think it was yesterday or the day before, which has sort of give them access to a potential windfall of $328 million as reported by Business Weekly. So there's two things really. One, yes, CHK1 has progressed. Two, look at the timeline, how long it's taken to progress, and also the interpretation of perhaps information back then against today. It's an interesting one, Justin. You know, the market cap of Sarium Holdings back then was about 5 million quid. Naturally, when it went up 25 times the multiple, it went dramatically higher, but it sort of settled and found a sensible level. Yeah, the shares were trading yesterday at 1.35p. They're up a little bit today, I think. And the market cap's now nearer to £40 million. The question I ask is, you know, Who's making the money here? Was it worth holding for 5 years, given the fact that the actual share price, due to the dilution it's taken to get the company progressed to this point, was it worth holding it for that 5 year period? I know there's going to be some long term holders out there that perhaps argue today that it's not been that rewarding, given the time that they've had to hold it. From a science perspective, it's becoming very rewarding because they've obviously progressed nicely with the CHK1 compound, and naturally they have a bunch of other different pipelines as well. They've got the Aurora FLT3, and they've also got, I think they have a skills program, to my knowledge, that was going to be used. Looking at the website, that doesn't appear to be something that they're focused to. Oh, right, TYK2. So they've got other compounds. They've got other parts of the business that they can look to sort of work with as well. So it's not just a case that CHK1 has got to a point now where they've got the licensing agreement, they've got potential to develop that and expand quickly with it, but they've also got some other compounds in their arsenal which they can then look to showcase and hopefully look to find a partner on, which again should yield additional value to shareholders.
Yeah, well, do you know what? You have to be a loyal shareholder to have held these. Like, even from going back 2013, they were at 2p, and they've grinded lower all the way down to 0.2 pretty much at the start of this year. And then they had a bit of a spike up. When was that? In March, came back down to 0.2. But yesterday, like I said, they more than doubled. But I just think with that grind lower, would many people held on? I definitely would have, wouldn't have, would you?
No, I mean, to be honest, there was a lot of people that back in them days that perhaps had invested £5,000, £10,000. And because there was such a big focus, there was a very tight network of people that invested in this, and they held it, they held a view. You know, you've got to remember that when you're talking about scientific businesses that focus on tumours and cancers, that the most people that gravitate towards these things do so because they've had some type of experience, which has drawn them to researching and looking into these things. And I remember back then, there was quite a lot of people that had experiences and exposure to deaths and illnesses within families, and they'd put the money into this. It went up from, you know, a 20th of 1p to a high of about 4.5p. I was fortunate and unfortunate in some respects that I was very much focused on the big caps back then. But, you know, I myself had family members who'd suffered with a cancerous illness. And I just sort of looked at it because of commentary that was taking place. And, you know, I was a buyer of the shares nowhere near spot 20. But certainly when they'd made the first move up to just over half a penny to 3/4, I was actually one of the fortunate guys that back then, because I was working in industry predominantly focused on blue chip companies, didn't really spend a lot of time following the intraday movements. I remember looking at this, the shares were up by 400% or something like that on the day. It might have even been 600%. And somebody had actually made a comment on a forum saying, I can get a sell quote. I'll never forget it. I can get a sell quote at 4.5p. Within 10 seconds of reading that, I'd sold my shares at 4.5p. I then went and repurchased those shares later down the line, and I've kept some involvement. As the years have gone by, my interest has started to fall away and dissipate. I had a chat to Tim Mitchell once after actually covering the company, because I felt there was a potential for this to actually open up and do really well a couple of years ago. I had a conversation with Tim. It didn't sort of meet my expectations, shall we say. From that point, I sort of left it to do its own thing. The fact that they've got a number of different pipelines and compounds, the fact that they've been able to attract now business like this, the market cap's quite firm, quite lumpy at this 35 to 40 million pound valuation. They've potentially got a lot more cash that can come in off the back of this CHK1 announcement yesterday. And obviously they've worked extensively on their TYK2 and Aurora FLT3 compound. You could sort of argue now that they've showcased CHK1, people are now starting to recognise it, and now we're going to start to see the eyes of the market fixated on what else they have. If that's the case, there could be an argument and certainly some rationale as to why people are buying the stock, because they can see that now CHK1's getting some of the recognition that we're going to get these other compounds starting to sprout or grow wings quickly. And if that be the case, then definitely you're going to really start to see things move along after an arduous 5-year hold for the initial spike in price, or in fact since the 12-year hold since the company was incorporated. It's been a long time coming, eh?
Yeah, tell me. Listen, moving on with the doctor analogy, did you see my blog on the weekend about Upland? Dr. Steve Staley is the CEO there.
I did see that you were talking about Upland, and I listened to you talking about that. So yeah, I was aware of that, absolutely.
Yeah, I quite like, do you know what? Steve has been in the background of a lot of sort of exciting stories, you know? And I know he's quite a sensible guy. He's really into due diligence. And I just think, I was looking at it and I'm thinking, they've got this, what's annoying is that it's the 14th onshore oil and gas award for these onshore things. Has been, you know, in the pipeline now for pretty much a year. They've been awarded in December. And yet the formal announcement, rubber stamping process pretty much, hasn't been awarded yet. But I've heard recently that it's going to happen in the next week or so. I don't know where this is. Rumours are basically happening, saying that the stamping will happen. It just takes this long. So that'll be their first asset. And they are, as I in talks. Look at their board. I mean, with two guys in Malaysia there. In fact, three very strong connections in Malaysia. So I think by this time next year, I predict they'll have three assets. And it's like 2.6 million market cap. They've got £1 million in cash. You know, they've got a guy there, Steve, involved in 80 Energy, Cove Energy. He brought them to the market, Independent Resources and Fastnet. So he's well-connected and he's a sensible guy as far as due diligence. I think, you know, you should put that on your watch list. So I think it will start to become exciting, especially after the rubber stamp, this formal award announcement. So that's my doctor connection there.
The one thing that we know is that he's had moderate success, but certainly a very innovative individual, because much of the whilst you know Fastnet didn't end particularly well, there was a huge amount of support in the market for that, particularly I think it was a sort of Hong Kong, Singapore, Chinese themed support for Fastnet. It did incredibly well at one point. Naturally, the markets have been dubious over the years for oil and gas companies. Some have done exceptionally well and others that have promised the earth have delivered little. But, you know, you look at Cove, really well put together business. They've done some pretty interesting things. You look at 88 Energy. It's been a darling of AIM in 2016, particularly at the start of the year. Really caught the attention of the market. Fastnet, again, had a huge support when that was in operation and looking to make those big leaps forward. Sadly, that one didn't come to pass. But, you know, obviously Steve's been involved with companies that can make big impressions. And I think if you know, UPL are able to make a big impression, then you're going to see the market cap sort of change quite dramatically. Quite interesting, actually, that Steve's taking more of a front-line role on this opposed to the other companies. Perhaps that's going to be the standout difference, and hopefully that's going to be the catalyst of things going on longer, further, and stronger.
Yeah, because you're right. He wasn't. I mean, with IRG, he stepped back from that because he said, you know, I did chat to him, and he said that he thought they were putting all the eggs in one basket, risk-wise, and he didn't like it, so he stepped away from that. With Fastnet, he was already starting Upland Resources with that anyway, so just his job was to, you know, bring assets and bring it to the market, so he did that. But now this is his sort of vehicle, and I quite like this, and he's got some big, you know, the chairman owns 30% of the shares. You know, there's very, very little free float about, so I just think... It could turn into something a little bit exciting here. At the moment, it doesn't look like that. But, I mean, if you do a bit of research, you can see why. All right, anything else you're looking at, Doc, at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of things that I've been looking at. I took a quick look at Churchill Mining. Obviously, you'd spoke to the guys at Churchill. They've been going through a long, arduous litigation case. From what I can gather, that's coming to a head. The market's valuation on Churchill's been quite profound, really, considering the situation it's found itself in. However, you know, over the last sort of certainly recent weeks, I'm just double checking before I go and comment. You're starting to see, definitely starting to see, a bit more interest coming into the stock. I think they've got potential legal award of hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions. But, you know, the problem with these litigation cases is they can drag on for a long period of time. And often, as with all legal cases, and having been involved in a serious accident myself, I've got some experience of this. They try to starve you, you know, they try to sort of let you sort of wither on the vine, wilt. And that's what happens in every legal case. It's a case of the longer these things drag on, the legal teams make, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds from dragging the business out. And naturally, there's a view that the people that are involved in the in this legal case or the litigation sort of wilt and give in. Or certainly will accept a lot less. It seems that Churchill played it quite clever. They managed to get to a point where the market can start, sort of see now that that the defence is weakening by the day, the week and the month, and the case looks a stronger one for Churchill. So there's some interest there. The market certainly seems to be picking up over the last month or 3 months. And that to me is a big surprise, because nearly always what you find with these things is they either trade sideways for a long period of time or they trade down, and people, as time goes on, they lose belief. So the fact that there's a general rumbling in the background certainly suggests that there's a bit of interest around it. If they're unsuccessful, you know, it could be the end of Churchill Mining. But if they are successful, you know, you could well see this thing trading back at, you know, multiples of where it is today, and it's interesting. So
is it like a flip of the coin punt, this one, really, do you think?
I think the minute that you go and invest into the junior markets, you sort of, in some people's eyes, you know, the out-and-out layman would say it's a flip of the coin. It's referred to globally as the AIM casino, isn't it? You know, that's not just, you know, one person's name for the market. That is a collective's name for the market. So I think whenever you look at these junior markets, you're taking on an element of risk. I think one of the sad facts is most people don't realise just how much risk they're taking, and often don't align themselves with the right levels of exposure. You know, I've not got a particular interest in Churchill. I've got a very few shares. I bought them actually not at a great price. I think I bought them at about 26.5p. And I'm just interested to see what goes on with it. If it goes tits up, I'm not going to really get too concerned about it. And if they do get the right result, then it's potentially going to be a massive sort of platform for where this can go. So, you know, to me, it's an interesting one. But, I, you know, what I've got to say, Justin, I think we've got to comment on, actually, now that the clock's ticking along a bit, is you and I picked up on Life Science, you know, one of Jim Mellon's companies. And as we've got closer towards that deadline, people now are getting windy, see a bit of selling coming in, and, oh, you know, if not, you know, we're losing confidence, we're not sure a deal will happen. You know, these guys have got months to do a deal should the share suspend from trading. I don't even think that's going to be the case. I know we're only a week or two away now. But, you know, it's a matter of any minute we could get that news. If you believe that these guys have got a greater plan, and given the fact that you had a conversation with Jim Mellon on your podcast quite recently, I'd be so surprised if in 6 months after that suspension it delisted and everybody lost the money. I'd be really surprised, and I'd be really disappointed, because I'm a shareholder myself. I'm hopeful.
Yeah. Okay, marvellous, Doc. And before I go, I mean, you know, I've got to thank you for PXOGs. I'm very well. I bagged that now. And you brought that to light. And I obviously had I had Ed on the podcast a couple of times, but it's done very well. So thanks for raising the awareness of that. I'm sure a lot of people have, because you were in the long before me. I know you were a bit of a loyal sort of supporter of the company for a while, weren't you? And it went off the ball a little bit, but you held in there and you said, this thing's going to happen here. And it took a while, but it's getting there, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think when we spoke about it on the podcast, and, you know, quite rightly, nobody was interested. You know, it was trading either at the placing price or just below. I'd put some money into the company initially at, I think it was 3p when they very first put the idea together. Things didn't go to plan. It didn't go at the pace that that the market wanted it to. It started to slip. I remember cutting back on that position. We had a period of about three or four sessions where the price really started to spike up. This was quite some time ago, not recently. And, you know, I cut back that position because I was disappointed at the pace that the business was working at. Wasn't particularly happy. Made those feelings known and clear, both publicly and to Ed. I had another chat to him probably about 6 months ago, and sort of realised that these guys had been through a very long-winded process with doing the deal out in Poland with Hutton. And whilst, you know, it was frustrating the amount of time it took, and it was over a year this deal took to put together, was promised to happen a lot sooner. You know, they managed to get the deal put together. It was done in the right way. You know, the risk and unrisk valuations were huge. I obviously bought some shares again, both in the open market. I took some in the 1p fundraise. I think it started to trade at about 5 or 8% discount to the placement price at that point. I was happy to keep buying the shares. I believed then that the company had finally turned that corner, but the market just didn't have the confidence. And I understood why the market didn't have the confidence, because there'd been some bitter disappointment on timelines prior to that. The company now have their asset. They've now managed to make some forward progress. We've been told recently that they're going to be spudding in November. The market's anticipating news any minute now on, I think it's an environmental permit. There'll be some civil works taking place. The spud will be going in at the start of November, so at some point around that period. And then we start to get drilling. And then we start to really start, you know, see whether this company can deliver on some of that relatively low risk drilling that they're going to, you know, take on. The boys that have been doing the job and that have been appointed to Hutton have had a great deal of success out in country. And as I said to you, Justin, they put their own money into the prospect fundraise once they've done the deal on with Hutton as well. So they come on board. I mean, there's no bigger kind of confidence booster than that. I know a lot of people are talking a lot about the technicals now, operations, where things can go. There's a great sort of narrative and dialogue taking place, which didn't exist when you and I first spoke about it on the podcast at a penny and a penny below. It is taking place today, and that's great to see. But one of the big sort of points that we have to remember is the drilling team on the ground. They've already had a 2 from 2 success. The drilling super or the engineer that the company have now appointed, the consultant that you had on the podcast, has done about 190 wells. So he's no spring chicken when it comes to this business. And as I say, the guys on the ground have took part in raising some of the cash for this drill and have put their own money in. You can't ask for more than that. And I'm confident that things will continue to do well.
Marvellous. And that concludes Doctor's Stock Surgery for this morning. Thanks, Doc. Speak soon.
Cheers, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. You're right, Al?
I'm very good, Jess. How are you?
I'm all right. The sun is shining. You know, the market seems positive today. But I was saying, I do every morning a podcast called 5 Things You Need to Know Today. And yep. One of them was the World Trade Organization have slashed global growth by a third. And I think so it was 2.8% they had it at, and now it's down to 1.7%. And I'm thinking, that's a big slash. And it's not just tinkering that, is it? Just in looking at it. I mean, to do that, you must have a conviction, you know, reason as to why you think, you know, the global is. And this has not been seen. This kind of slow pace has not been seen since the 2009 financial crash. And I'm thinking, that's not encouraging, is it really?
It's not. No, I'd agree with you. But as in all these situations, there are you have to sort of sort the wheat from the chaff, and you've got to find the opportunities, because in every situation like this, there is an opportunity. And I still believe, as I've said the past couple of weeks, that the Brexit, far from being the nightmare that was predicted by David Cameron's government, has actually turned out to be a great opportunity for the UK economy. And indeed, we've discussed these small UK companies that are growing rapidly over the past couple of weeks. We've discussed Stiles and Wilbur, we've discussed Renew Holdings, and there are thousands of other companies doing the same thing. But I think an old colleague of mine sent me an email yesterday saying, "Help! The markets are crashing. Should I sell? Should I sell? Should I get out now?" And it's interesting, if you look at the chart of the FTSE 100, we tested 6635 on August the 3rd, and we hit a higher low of 6665 on September the 13th. And we're trading this range, aren't we? We seem to be trading this range between just over 6.9 and 6.67. So I think if we dip below 6.7, then you'd either take the view that it would be an opportunity to pick up some high yield stocks, or if you might want to take some profits and then go back in at some other time. But my view or my strategy at the moment is I've probably got two-thirds to three-quarters of my portfolio in high-yield stocks like Shell. Mm-hmm. And I will look to top that up on any dips in the market. And then I'm looking at these. I've got a small cap budget where I'm in companies like Andalus Energy, Advanced Oncotherapy, and so on. And then I've got sort of a mid-cap investment a budget where I'm looking at the companies that we've discussed over the past few weeks.
Yeah, well, so. Do you know what? Well, three things really, though. First of all, we haven't had Brexit. That's the problem, you know. I mean, nothing's changed until we start. You know, 2 years after we invoke Article 50, we're still in the European Union, and so nothing's changed. Only sentiment really has changed, isn't it? And the fear factor has come into it, which is so. We've got this huge lag factor, which we don't know when it starts. Essentially, I mean, there are companies now. You know, we know sort of pondering over whether to move their operations or management or HQ to the European centre there. And secondly, I was thinking, you're right about sort of a bigger stocks, but also what I'm almost isolated from the macro to ins and froings are really small stocks, you know? They work on a specific news to them, you know? Yeah. And unless that news is affected by the macro picture, you can still get amazing performance out of tiny micro caps, as you know. So like any company, do your own research and make sure the fundamentals are looking strong and the balance sheets and all that. But I was talking to another investor, wheelie dealer, and I said, you know, the small caps, you know, they don't conform to macro news. Essentially, they have their own environment, you know, and. So you can isolate yourself from that. And also, thirdly, you mentioned wheat and chaff, and I think we should set out a little business here to make use of the chaff, because people get rid of the chaff, and I'm thinking, surely there's a business in chaff. If people are just throwing that away, then maybe we should do something with the chaff, you know? Maybe microcaps are the chaff, you know? But like I said, you can make a use of them. There are some good little microcap companies out there. Anyway,
well, there are, yeah. Go on. Well, there are, and your guest yesterday, David Paul at Vectorvest, of course, that, you know, they have a screening. That Vectorvest provides the stock screening service to enable you to do just that, because there are thousands of companies out there. How do you find them? How do you set the criteria to find these companies? And that's where the tool's quite useful. And I've been using this for a couple of weeks, and we're going to get onto this in a minute. I'm going to talk about a company that, in fact, David spoke about yesterday, which has been thrown up by the system. And I've taken a look at this company, and it ticks all the boxes that I've been sort of highlighting over the past few weeks.
So what is that company?
Yeah. Well, the company's Trifast. Yeah. TRI is the Epic code.
Yeah. And what do you like about it? Why is it one to look at? Why is it one to put on a watch list?
Well, again, it's a company. It's not a glamorous company. It's a company that manufactures fasteners, and they.
Sexy.
They Sexy stuff, yeah. They're in automotive, electronics, medical, domestic appliances, telecoms, third parties. And probably I came across them on the automotive front because those of you that know me know that when I'm not at work, I spend time in my garage tinkering with classic motorbikes. So occasionally if you're restoring an old engine, you'll need some new fasteners and you'll buy a pack of fasteners, and there are all sorts of shops around. But Trifast do supply into this sector. And it's a high volume business, low margin, but they've been producing these fasteners for many years, and they've got a global presence. They've made a series of acquisitions throughout the world. And they've got a really solid, steady business. It's a real cash cow, and I like this company. And it's also underscored by the fact that the dividend yield is at nearly 2%. And this is a company that's got a market cap of just 180 million. So it's not really started to motor yet. So Trifast, if we look at the performance over the past year, the shares have been as low as just over a pound, as high as £1.54, and indeed we're not too far off that now, at around 1.52. But a comparison to the industrial engineering, it's in the industrial engineering sector. Comparison to companies in this peer group who tend to trade on a P of sort of 20 or more, Trifast trades on a P of just over 14. So really, there's I know David Paul, who was on yesterday, mentioned that they believe the share could be as high as £2, and clearly that would take up the slack in any P if it made it to that, but. From a timing standpoint, I also, as you know, in the past, I like fundamental timing points. We're in the run-up also to a trading update. Back in July, the company said trading in all regions across the world were in line since the June results. They're due to issue an update in early October. Company's on track for organic growth and capital investments of about 4% a year. This is a company that's just steadily growing, manufacturing, supplying across the world, high volume, low margin products. But it's just a really solid business, and I see this company could continue at this rate of growth for many years. It won't be a spectacular performer, but clearly, if you picked it up, the shares up in December when it was just over a pound, you'd be sitting on a nice gain now and enjoying a 2% dividend yield. So I'm going to put my head on the block and say I'm going to have a go at this. So part of my budget in my portfolio that's set aside for mid-cap, small mid-cap growth companies, I'm going to put a chunk of money into Trifast.
Right, cool. Have you done that yet, or are you going to?
I'm going to do it right after this. So,
all right. So you're buying at, say, one. I'd put a limit order there at 150. Get a nice round figure there. So maybe it may dip that. And cool. We'll monitor that. I'll try fast. And what's the ticker there? TRFT, I think, isn't it?
TRI is the ticker.
TRI. Sorry, I've got it on. Why is it? I'm on a charting system here on investing.com. And it's got. TRFD, but it says Trifast, United Kingdom. So it's 151 at the moment, aren't they? 0.6.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So that's the right stock I'm looking at. Yeah. Strong chart, a heck of a lot of momentum there. And like I said, if you can buy on a little dip, hopefully it'll carry on, going up that momentum trail. Okay, lovely, Al. Trifast, one for the watch list, and Al's in for it. He's buying. So
buying.
That's where the money flow is going, guys. All right. Cheers, Al. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Jess. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. And like I said, we do approach these companies to appear on the podcast because there's demand for them, and they are being followed, highly followed here. So at five, it's always there. They've been on the podcast. They will be on again. That's CloudTag, CTAG. At four, EVRH Holdings. Anthony has been on the podcast. He will be on again, hopefully, very soon. At three, a new entry, IGAS, IGAS. At two, Doc covered them earlier on. It's Sarium Holdings, SAR. And at number one, a highly followed stock here. It's eServe Global, ESG, had an RNS out today. And in fact, I'll move on to that. By the way, if you want to see the top followed companies this week on the website, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. So, the most liked RNSs this morning. I mentioned them. It's a tie, a three-way tie. These three companies have all had their RNSs liked the most. eServe Global, who I just mentioned, their HomeSend announced partnership with Ericsson. Harvest Minerals, HMI, Arapua Fertilizer Project update. And Seeing Machines, the CEO appointed for Fovio. Those three were the most liked RNSs, so they're probably worth reading. Do a bit of research there. And like I said, you just click the links here at voxmarket.co.uk/blog, and you click the links and read the RNSs, or just type in their tickers there. So it's C, HMI, and ESG. All right, today's suggested one for your watch list has been suggested by Matt, and it's Aminex, AEX, his ticker. What does the company do? Gas producer, explorer with a portfolio focus in Tanzania, Kilwani North, was granted a development license early this year and is now connected, flowing and creating revenue for the company. The much larger Natoria drills in the south of Tanzania near Mozambique are now fast approaching and will start within 30 days. And Natoria 1 was a discovery that was drilled in 2014. Natoria 2 and 3 will now appraise this discovery and is targeting 1.5 TCF and a 25-year development license for Natoria. How many shares does the company have in issue? 3.4 billion. What's the current price of market cap? This is of today, of course. 60 million market cap and a price of 1.7 million pence. What revenue, profit or loss did the company generate? First revenue received in August 18th from Kilwani North Gas. Amount not disclosed yet, but depending on flow rates, will generate between 10 and $15 million per annum, and is paid in US dollars at an agreed rate of $3.07 per MCF. So $3 per MCF there. The loss for the period, by the way, was $2.45 million for 6 months, ended June the 30th, 2016. How much cash or debt does the company have? For 6 months, ended 30th of June, they had cash of $1.3 million, but at post-period end, they've raised $23.8 million with a major new strategic investor. There's three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, a third-ish of the company is owned by a long-term cornerstone investor, that's Zubar Corporation. Number two, Natoria 1 is a discovery already, so upcoming Natoria 2-3 wells, starting within 30 days, are to appraise a prospective 1.5 TCF. Site is close to pipelines and can easily be connected once the PSA is agreed on. Aminex have already shown that they can do this with Kilwani North and have a good relationship with Tanzanian authorities. And number three, reason three to add to your watch list, CEO Jay, excuse my pronunciation, Bataji, I assume, increased his stake on the 16th of September at a price above the current share price. He now holds over 45 million shares. So that's Aminex, ticker AEX, and those are the reasons why Matt reckons you should add it to your watch list. So check it out. Sounds quite good there. On the edge of major news and starting to gain some revenue. Thank you very much for getting involved, Matt. And by all means, if you know of a stock with potentially that you think people should add to their watch list, just go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog, click the link there, fill out the form, and it will be on a future podcast. There's not too much of a wait. There's a couple in the pipeline talking about gas. But I'll get to it very soon. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.